Welcome to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Friday, August 11, Chicago, Illinois. Hello again, Orion Samuelson, along with Max Armstrong, joining you at the end of another tumultuous week in the stock market and also in the grain market. Indeed, there were factors totally outside of producing wheat, corn, or soybeans, or making any kind of big moves in stocks over which we really don't have much control. It shows once again that the markets are very susceptible to last-minute events such as the tension between North Korea and the United States. And so, as we look at the details for the end of the week, the S&P fell 1.4%. The Dow lost 1.1%. The NASDAQ dropped 1.5%. And then for the week, the volatility index, the worry factor at the CBOE, went up 5.5 points. That was its largest weekly advance since the election week back in November. So it's been a week where activity outside of the markets, indeed, had an impact. Commodity market, well, the grain market was impacted by the first crop report of the season, the August crop report. We'll talk more about that later as Max visits with Paul Georgie, who is chairman of Allendale, the advisory market firm based in McHenry, Illinois. But let's take a look at the last trading day of the week. The three major indices ended higher today, snapping 3 days of losses. Investors betting on slower U.S. rate hikes, but gains indeed were muted by increasingly aggressive exchanges between the United States and North Korea. Weaker than expected July consumer price data today led investors to bet that benign inflation would keep the U.S. Federal Reserve from raising rates again this year. And while this gave investors some hope after the jittery week, there were still signs of nervousness in choppy late afternoon trading because of the U.S.-North Korea problem. And as we check some of the other data that did give investors appetite for growth sectors such as information technology and biotechnology, it soured them to rate-sensitive stocks such as banks, according to one analyst. Robert Phipps, a director at Per Sterling Capital Management in Austin, said he was reassured after Dallas Fed President Rob Kaplan said the Fed needs evidence of progress toward its inflation goal before raising rates. Traders saw the chance of a rate hike in December falling to 40% from 42% before the data that came out today. Nearly $1 trillion has been wiped out of global equity markets since the vow that Trump made earlier this week to unleash fire and fury on North Korea if it threatens the United States. So today, one of the big losers, JCPenney, down 16.6% after hitting an all-time record low following the retailer's bigger-than-expected quarterly loss. And shares of Snap ended down 14% after hitting a record low following a miss on revenue and daily active users, and at least 12 brokerages cut their price targets on the stock of Snap. So what do we look at next week? Well, of course, we'll continue to watch the North Korea-U.S. Situation. But the world's largest retailer, Walmart, expected to report a lower second quarter profit on Thursday as it invests heavily in cutting prices and pours more money into its online business. Attention will shift to retail sales next week after soft July inflation data. The Commerce Department expected a report on Tuesday that retail sales rebounded 0.4% in July, after falling 0.2% in June. Other data on TAP next week include the Commerce Department's Housing Starts report on Wednesday. That's expected to show not much change in the home building numbers. And then on Thursday, the Federal Reserve is expected to report that industrial production increased 0.3% in July. A lot of traders will be watching the release of the minutes of the July 25-26 meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee, where it left interest rates unchanged and did say it expected to start winding down its massive holdings of bonds relatively soon. So that will be examined by quite a few of the analysts and traders. Home Depot scheduled to report second quarter results on Tuesday. The number one U.S. home improvement chain said in May that sales in this quarter were off to a good start, despite mixed GDP forecasts. But investors will be interested in comments from the retailer about Sears selling Kenmore appliances on Amazon.com, as Home Depot has gained market share in the appliance business while Sears is shutting stores. On Wednesday, Cisco Systems will report fourth quarter results. The world's largest networking gear maker expected to report a seventh straight decline in quarterly revenue. Target Corporation will report second quarter earnings on Wednesday. Last month, the retailer said it expects sales to increase, which would be the first such increase in five quarters. And then the agricultural community will certainly focus on Friday as Deere & Company reports higher third-quarter revenue and profit. At least that's what the analysts are expecting. They say that Deere & Company is being helped by improving demand for its farm and construction equipment in South America. The off-price retailer TJX Company is expected to post sales growth in the second quarter on Tuesday, as bargain-hungry shoppers continue to buy more at its stores. Investors will look out for any earnings forecasts for the year and any slowdown due to price competition from Walmart and Amazon.com. And then U.S., Mexican, and Canadian officials will meet in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday for the first round of talks to renegotiate NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement. We'll talk a little more in detail about that a little bit later. On Thursday, the owner of the Old Navy and Banana Republic apparel chains expected to report a lower second quarter profit, as once again, the retail clothing industry is faced with a lot of challenge because of lack of mall traffic and an increase in online buying. So Gap, the owner of the Old Navy and Banana Republic, expected to show another drop in sales. We'll take a look at events in the agricultural world coming up when we continue here on the Markets sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
From Allendale Incorporated, Paul Georgie joining us in the studio with the August crop report behind us now. The numbers, the surprising numbers that came out in that report, yields were bigger than expected, right, on both corn and soybeans?
USDA had a big surprise on corn yields at 169.5. The trade average was looking for about a 166 yield, and I think in reality they're thinking it's a 163.5 yield. So that was a big surprise to the trade, putting the ending stocks basically the same as they are this year. Many were thinking that we could have ending stocks in below 2 billion bushel. They're still looking at 2.3 billion bushel, so not much change there. Soybeans, same kind of situation. Actually, a bigger surprise there. They raised the soybean yield to 49.5, which is about a bushel and a half more than what they had in July, and about 2 bushel more than what the trade was expecting. But the reason they came up with these big yields, Max, is that they showed tremendous crops across the Delta, the Southeast, and even up into New York is where they had record corn yields, record soybean yields they're projecting in those areas. So that's offsetting some of this problem that we have here in the Midwest.
The yield number on soybeans, as I look back through the years, there was a time when USDA played it very conservative in the August crop report. And I think if you look back over the past 20 years, a significant number of those, more than half, wound up with a final higher soybean yield than that August estimate. They're not conservative in this this number, are they?
They're not conservative, but you know they're not conservative overall as far as the overall average because they're putting a lot of bushels in the Delta and in the South. I think the surprise comes here in the August report. Everybody thinks that the USDA is going to make big adjustments on yield potential acreage. They don't normally do that. Out of the last 15 years, I think they've only made adjustments five times that were significant on the yield. They wait until the September, the October numbers before they really cut the crop dramatically. Like the crop in Indiana, for instance, they held it the same as a year ago. And talking to producers in Indiana, especially around Kokomo, they're saying, I replanted four times, and there's no way I'm going to get the corn that I had a year ago. So they leave a lot of room for adjusting down the road. I don't think you take this to heart completely, but the problem is it's not friendly to help us get some of this old crop corn sold that we got holding in the bins right now.
Acreage. And you talked about the fact that farmers replanted. Some did not get planted. Have they fully taken into account in this report, in your mind, what has happened with the acreage, the unplanned development of acreage because of a wet spring?
Well, I think they did to acreage what we expected they would do, and that's not change anything. Because out of the last, since 1980, they've only changed seven times on this report, and it was very small amount. So they normally don't change the acreage. That's coming yet. We will have the FSA report looking at prevent planted acres there. I think the key number on this FSA report is the prevent planted because history tells us that whatever they come out with in the August prevent planted number is about 94 to 99% of actual acres. So they don't change it very much. So that will be extremely important. On the prevent planting. So then we'll start to get some acreage numbers that we play with here and what we will expect. Everything in this August report from the trade was really a guess and what they see. So I think we've got that coming down the road, and that could be a bit friendly, I would think.
A farmer who was looking for the opportunity to market and still some of that old crop corn sitting around didn't get the chance to move it on out with this report, did they?
This is not not good for the guy that's holding on to the old crop grain expecting a rally. However, there is a bright spot here, and that is the more research has done a look at what the price of corn does after the August report. 13 out of the last 15 years, the next 2 weeks, the corn market rallies. So hopefully we can see that, and I could understand why we could see a rally here even after we have this bearish number. It's simply because of the FSA number that comes out, and when we get out in the field and start to see the yield, that could change dramatically.
And weather is still important, is it not, for some of the late planted crops?
Weather is extremely important. I mean, the development yet, rain in August makes the bean crop, and there's a lot of areas that August is moving right along here, and we need to get some rain, and especially in Iowa, in a big soybean producing state. The other thing that we haven't talked about yet, but will come up in the next few weeks, is this early frost. When are we going to freeze? We got a lot of corn. Even in our area here in northern Illinois, we got corn just tasseling this week, and it's got a long way to go before it develops a ear that can be harvested.
So stay close to your advisor. If people like Allendale, I would imagine you'd say, right, Paul Georgie?
I would say stay close to us and check in with us on our crop survey. That's coming up here in about 10 days.
Paul Georgie with Allendale Incorporated.
We also had another guest in our studio this week who is really looking forward to the end of the month.
Don Torte with Farm Progress. What's happening the end of the month?
It's the biggest farm show in America. It comes once again to Decatur, Illinois. And a little over 2 weeks away. It's amazing how quickly that time flies.
But you spend an entire year preparing for this show.
Certainly our team does. It takes a lot of moving parts, a lot of people, and not only us, but our exhibitors as well. It seems like they get through one or two of their winter shows, and they're already preparing for the Farm Progress Show.
So what's happening to the number of visitors to the show? Stable?
Well, that we'll see when we get there, but we would anticipate, we look at advanced ticket sales right now. They're up versus where they've been in the past, and we're prepared for a great show.
Oh, and the question is, you can order tickets online. Where do you go to do that?
You sure can, farmprogressshow.com. So if you go there, there's the opportunity right on there to not only order tickets in advance, but also get a discount for doing so.
And you can map your show. I mean, you can go and decide what you want to do, and you can actually work with the website to determine your route at the show.
Not only see what exhibitors are there, but mark which ones you'd like to see, and then that kicks out a schedule. So it can help you plan your day at the show. There's a lot to see and do, so it's probably a good thing to do.
Growers are definitely serious about what they want to see, but it does become somewhat of a social event for some, too. I have a friend who goes in his camper, and he's 8 a.m. when the gates open. He knows what he wants to see, but I'll get a text from him. The night before, he'll say, "We're in town, Max, come see us." And it's really a neat event, the way growers plan their end of the summer around it.
Right. We're not shy about that. The right farmers are there.
Absolutely. Exhibitors
know that. But it's also a social event. It's an opportunity for agriculture to come together and see the latest in agriculture, but also bring everyone together. And that's a big part of the world that we're all in.
The permanent structures that are going in on your two sites, it seems like they're increasing. Case IH has put in one for this year.
Yeah, they have. And that's really nice because it's easier for them to set up. But it's also, like we say, with permanent restrooms and permanent streets, it's great for the visitor. It's great for a visitor in a case exhibit as well because you have a cement floor and it just makes it a little bit more weather independent.
More of the buildings have air conditioning too.
The last couple years, we've counted over 30 exhibits with air conditioning, which is amazing. It wasn't that many years ago, none had it, and now it's just continued to expand.
Of course, the hallmark of this show over the years, and I don't think you were at the first one, Orion, in 1953.
Not quite, but not too many years thereafter.
It's the field demos, of course, that were the hallmark to begin with, and you still emphasize field demonstrations.
Absolutely. It's one of the special things. It's kind of the magic of the Farm Progress Show. So we'll have combining. The crops look great. We got them in early. It was great planting weather. It's been kind of a tough growing year, but they look right on schedule for harvest. So we'll have harvest demonstrations. Right before harvest demonstrations, we're having drone demos. Later that afternoon, we have field tillage demonstrations. And then there's tiling demonstrations and ride and drives as well. So lots of moving parts that people can actually see machines work.
Drone demonstrations. I would imagine that not only emphasizes the aircraft, but probably the software now.
Yeah, a lot of that right before combining will actually be the aircraft that they'll be doing. Dennis Bowman from the University of Illinois will be utilizing that. It's hard to do because we're so close to an airport right there, but he has the FAA license to do that. So we need to make sure that's all under his control, but it should be a really neat part of the show.
One thing about these permanent sites, and especially Decatur, Illinois, being close to the interstate, you don't have the vehicular traffic nightmares that you once did going out to a remote farmstead.
Right. We're always a little bit of backup is not always bad because a lot of people are coming in, but you're not going to be in line forever. It's right at the interstate, plus, the state police and local law enforcement, they're really good at that. They've been doing it enough.
We sure look forward to seeing you there, Don. Thank you for coming in to give us a little bit of a preview. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. We look forward to seeing you there.
Don Torte with Farm Progress, the Farm Progress Show coming up the 29th through the 31st, Decatur, Illinois. Yeah, we'll be there. We'll be at ADM each day during the noon hour. We hope you'll come see us. Join us next week. weekend on This Week in Agribusiness. We look forward to it. So long, everyone.
Indeed, we'll be looking forward to seeing many of you at the Farm Progress Show. Every day at noon, we'll be in the ADM tent with some very interesting guests.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
As we continue here on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group, we look ahead to an event next week. An effective dispute settlement mechanism is essential in any trade agreement, Canada's Foreign Affairs Minister said today, less than a week before the first round of negotiations on the North American Free Trade Agreement. Now, Canada's desire to include a dispute settlement mechanism in a renegotiated NAFTA has put the country on course for a potential clash with Washington, which said in its goals released last month it wants to drop the current system known as Chapter 19. Now, under Chapter 19, binational panels hear complaints about illegal subsidies and dumping, and then issue binding decisions. And the United States has frequently lost such cases. But according to Canadian Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland, having an effective dispute settlement mechanism is really essential in any trade deal. Canada really understands the importance of independent, objective, transparent dispute settlement within NAFTA, and it's something that we'll be talking about with our partners and explaining to them. Her comments echoed those recently made by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, as well as Canada's ambassador to Washington, David McNaughton. The first round of NAFTA renegotiation talks will start in Washington on August 16. Now, Freeland said after meeting with members of the agricultural sector that the industry recommended the NAFTA talks could be used to reduce some of the red tape that they face around cross-border trades. That could be an area of productive conversations with the United States, giving the U.S. administration's focus on making it easier to do business. But there is concern that the discussion to renegotiate NAFTA is going to really boil down to a battle between labor unions and manufacturers and agricultural producers and traders in the agricultural community. There is a lot of concern that it could be that kind of a fight, which really would not be beneficial, I think, to either side to come up with any kind of a battle between manufacturers and labor and agriculture. The success of NAFTA, since Bill Clinton signed it into law back in the 90s, has really been excellent as far as agriculture is concerned, but I think as far as many other of our segments of industry are concerned as well. And the concern that farmers now have is there could be items in the renegotiation that will put one of the country's agricultural groups on the defensive. And that's one thing we don't need as we go into this always difficult negotiation on trade. How many trade negotiations have we watched over the years, the WTO, that brought clashes and riots in cities where they would gather to decide whether or not they would come up with some worldwide trade rules that would work? I remember them well, and Max Armstrong certainly remembers them because he was at a couple of cities where they did have on the streets of the city riot-type activities. So, but I've also said that watching
trade agreement negotiations is like watching paint dry. It takes forever to hammer out negotiations that will satisfy everybody. And of course, if it satisfies one side more than any other, then it probably isn't the best negotiation, because every side has to give on the kind of negotiations we're going into. And it'll be interesting to see if once we do hammer out a new NAFTA, if we'll then go back to trying to rebirth the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership Agreement that President Trump took out of the picture immediately after taking office. So let's take a look at where we ended the week agriculturally price-wise. You know, we've been talking about an oil glut for quite some time. We're now talking about a cattle glut. Too many cattle, too little demand for the beef product in the supermarket. And as a result, we've been watching a sell-off in the cattle market. And one analyst, Brian Hoops of Midwest Marketing Solution, talking about cattle, said, "We've had a big down week. I think this is a kind of dead cat, technical bounce, temporary recovery ahead of the weekend, because today the cattle market did recover. Buyers attracted to futures that were underpriced or at a discount compared to this week's prices for cash cattle, and funds bought the October contract after it surpassed the 200-day moving average. This week, cash cattle in the plains brought $114 to $116 per hundredweight. And so where do we start Monday morning in the livestock market, the Mercantile Exchange? Well, the lean hog contract gained 22 cents today. So come Monday, we'll start trading at $84.65 a hundredweight. August live cattle, $109.72 a hundredweight at the close today, after gaining 90 cents. And the August feeder cattle contract will start trading next week at $141.77 after gaining 77 cents a hundredweight today. Now, the grain market. Oh, that's a different story, thanks to that August crop report that we discussed earlier with Paul Georgie of Allendale. But wheat futures dropped even lower today, led by a sharp decline in Minneapolis spring wheat as investors liquidated bullish positions following that August crop report. The sell-off pushed the benchmark Chicago Board of Trade soft red winter wheat contract to its lowest level in nearly 2 months. And Minneapolis spring wheat ended down a little more than 4%, hitting its lowest level since June 26th, again pressured by the bigger-than-expected crops that were reported in the August crop report. So as we look ahead to next week, where do we start the trade? Spring wheat in the nearby September contract will start at 439 and a quarter, down 2 cents today. September, well, let's make it December corn. Both of them, as a matter of fact, since both of them gained 4 cents in the end of the week trade today, and that means come Monday, December corn will start trading at $3.74¾ a bushel. And the August soybean contract gained 4¼ today, while November gained 5½ cents. And November beans will start trading at $9.45 a bushel on Monday. One other comment that I do want to make that is away from the marketplace happened today at the first full day of the Illinois State Fair. Quite a story. An agreement between the National 4-H Foundation and Google.org. Explained by Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner, the two formed a collaboration that will support new computer science education programs throughout the nation. Google executives announced the partnership and granted $1.5 million to 4-H today during a ceremony at the Illinois State Fair in Springfield. Good marriage, good way to support the 4-H program. And a good way to end this program is we thank you for joining us. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, on the Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.